Hey, this is Anthony from Indie Worldwide. Excuse me. I know I've been gone for a while, but we're back. Hey, we're doing new stuff, and we're starting a new series, tentatively named "Featured Founder Fridays," where I get on a call with some indie hacker, probably a lot of Indie Worldwide members, but we might get some outsiders as well. I interview them about their journey as an indie hacker, how they've built what they've built. And then feature them in the Indie Worldwide newsletter. And some of those will be turned into podcasts like this. But if you want to read all of them, if you prefer to read, or if you don't want to miss any, definitely subscribe to the Indie Worldwide newsletter. You can find it at indieworldwide.com. And the first thing you'll see is the sign-up link. So today is the very first interview that I've done. It's with a member of Indie Worldwide who's been around for over a year now. Who I met on Twitter. Her name is Emma Fletcher. Many of you will know her from Twitter. She is building two startups at the moment. One is an e-commerce business selling kits for learning how to solder. And the other is a productized service doing support for startups. So we talked about how to start an indie business, what her journey was like. Excuse me. Balancing indie stuff and having a full-time job, which she did for many years, how she found her co-founder, how she found her first employees, some of the things you don't think about when you think about starting a business. Like, we kind of romanticize entrepreneurship, but we forget that you have to pay your taxes and do your books. So we covered some of the how-to on that as well. And Emma's just a lovely person. So we had a delightful conversation, and I hope you enjoy it as well.
Great. I don't know if you saw Twitter, but today is my 1 year indieversary, which we were talking about on the
Yes,
Slack
I
room.
remember we were brainstorming what to call it.
I think
And today's the day.
indieversary is good. It's a little hard to say, maybe, but
It rolls off the tongue, I would say. All right, 1 year
I like it.
anniversary, 1 year indieversary. Perfect timing then for you to be our very first
Yeah.
Featured Founder Friday. We'll see about the name. I don't know if the name will stick, but the concept. The
Naming
concept
is
of once
hard.
a
I
week.
think naming's maybe the hardest part of business
Yeah.
development.
Every time I think I got it, I realize I do not. Someone, like, I thought
That's
body
okay.
brand, like,
Nobody
oh, easy.
cares.
Three
Nobody cares
nouns.
about the name in the
Yeah.
long run. That's what I found. They're like, whatever. As long as people
Yeah.
call it something.
I don't know who said it, but like they said, it was about brands, and it was like a brand is something you build, right? It's not just the name and the logo; it's everything you do under that brand that gives it meaning. Like Nike and the swoosh is
That's true.
meaningless without the history of Nike. So,
Absolutely.
and there's all kinds of like weird businesses that don't make sense, the names and things, but we learn
Well,
Berkshire
I feel
Hathaway
like
means nothing.
my first business is just called Learn to Solder Kits. It's just what it is. It's not
It's
like a
solid.
cool name or anything.
Did that help your SEO at all? Like having learned
Yes,
to
I think
solder
it
in your name?
actually helped. I didn't know what SEO was when I named it, but I do think it helped our SEO a lot because if you search for a learn to solder kit, we are first or second that come up. So that's pretty good.
Let's see. Learn to. So it's solder. When I hear it said, it's always solder. When I read it, I can't help
The
pronouncing the L.
spelling, it's a little, yeah, solder.
Yeah, you're number one for me. Learn to solder.
Number one, doing very minimal SEO work. So I think, yeah, the name definitely helped.
So I bought one of your kits. It's still sitting on my shelf, though. I haven't put it together yet because I thought I had an iron
Sure.
already, and I couldn't find it in the basement.
No
So I think I have to
worries. You're
get
halfway
another
there.
one. Yeah. So learn to solder kits help mostly kids, but also learning adults, right? Learn
Also
how to
adults. I mean, we
do
have a
this
lot of
work.
adults. I'd say we do a lot of high school and college students
Okay,
as
cool.
well, right? So they're kind of like, they're adults, but you know. But then I get emails from people who are 70 years old, and they're like, I picked up a new hobby, fixing radios, and I want to learn how to solder. I'm like, great, let's
That's
do
really
it,
freaking cool.
It's awesome.
And now, so you're working on two startups now, and I want to ask you questions about both of them, but just so
Okay.
we're off the top, we know what we're getting into. We've got learn to solder kits, which is you've been working on for a while.
Yeah, I believe. Since 2015.
That is a while. That's longer like than years? I've been working on Indie Worldwide, and that's been a while too. And then you got Evergreen Support, which is a lot newer.
Yeah,
I believe.
Yes.
And are those the only two big projects on your plate?
Those are currently my only two. I do feel like I rotate through a lot of things and try a lot of new ideas, but those are definitely my two main things right now.
Yeah. And how is your time split? Is it like Learn to Solder knows what it's doing, or are they both still kids?
That's a good question. Learn to Solder definitely. Day-to-day work could just kind of chug along without me, no problems. I've got two employees who work for me. They really know how to handle all the kind of typical stuff that comes up. Of course, we email a lot back and forth and check in. They work remotely, so we don't kind of async work. But it's pretty minimal in terms of hours. While Evergreen definitely takes up the majority of my time since it's newer, I mean, we started about 8 months ago. No idea what I was doing. Just had like a vague idea, right? And for Evergreen, it's just me and my business partner, Ellis. We don't have any employees right now, so we're doing everything, right? Learning everything. Yeah. And that keeps me pretty busy.
Are you taking care of all the support requests as well? Or is that like...
Yeah, Ellis and I do all the support requests. We got 11 clients right now. And just my typing has gotten real fast. I'll tell you that.
Most founders will do anything to get out of doing support. And you've done the opposite. Which is, I guess, why there's
a great business. Right? yeah, definitely a great business. I think we'll hire for that too. Eventually we'll... see, right? Like, I'm definitely one of those people who I like to learn all the inner workings of a business before I hire someone, right? Because I want to be able to train them and understand what I'm asking them to do and how much work it is and where the challenges are. So still in that phase right now for Evergreen.
So let's maybe give a little timeline of Learn to Solder. You're public with your revenue, right? Post on Twitter frequently.
Yeah, I share like rounded numbers. I don't have like the specific number on it, but yeah, happy
so
to share.
So what's our rounded number for Learn to Solder and Evergreen Support right now?
Okay, so last year for Learn to Solder Kids, we did about 220K in revenue, which is pretty good, but in terms of e-commerce, that's still pretty small. Try to hit that 250K mark this year, and
That'd
I think
nice.
We will with our growth. And then Evergreen Support is just at 7K MRR. So we work on monthly recurring revenue there. Mm. So we're just there, really excited about that in 7-8 months. I mean, I feel like that's pretty awesome.
So you're adding about 1,000 a month if it's linear.
Yeah, roughly 1,000 a month. Though onboarding has been one of our big challenges is like figuring out how to get up to speed on all these clients and stuff. So,
yeah. Has that been a big challenge? Cause it's feels like a big departure from your, your e-com business, right? Now you're doing a service.
And I think, and then, you know, the other side of me is like, I was a software developer for 10 years, right? So like my career, my college training, right, is software engineering. Did that for 10 years in like product development. So customer support is a bit of a change, but I think there's some things that helped me with it. One, running my own e-com store for 7-8 years, I did my own customer support, right? So I know that side of it. And then I actually think my software engineering background helps in that I understand how to like look at problems and kind of like break them down into like if, else, then, you know, which kind of all customer support problems in a way are. I think one of the hard problems with customer support is not everybody has a great handle on their operations. So sometimes it's really hard to distill it down, right? It's like there's all these moving pieces. Okay, how do we get it to a simple... if this happens, then do this, then send this message, then you're done, right? Or then follow up. But I actually really like thinking that way. And so that's kind of what I bring to the businesses that we work with.
So what was the decision flow chart that said, I've got this $250,000 a year business. It's going pretty well. Let me now put all my time into a brand new
business. Great question. Well, I think with e-commerce, right, quarter million's great, but for typical e-commerce, you're seeing only 10 to 20% profit there. So ton of money gets poured back into buying parts, right? Paying Amazon. We're an Amazon seller, and that's where I do a lot of my business. And Amazon takes a big cut, you know, in fees and advertising. Our profit margin is like slightly better because I do a lot of stuff in-house, so maybe 20 to 25% profit margin. Good money, right? Not software engineering salary replacement money, right? And so I knew I wanted to leave my job, and I was like, okay, I've got some money coming in. Like, that's great. That's going to help a lot. But I don't know if I can grow it quickly enough to replace my salary. What else could I do? You know, it's running really smoothly, so I do have a lot of hours. And the customer support idea had been kicking around in my head for like 2 to 3 years. Like, I had looked for somebody to do this job for Learn to Solder Kits. It's like, I need someone to do customer support, but it's super part-time. Like, they just need to check the inbox for like 15 minutes to an hour a day. And I couldn't find anybody to fit that role, right? And so my idea was like, let's create a fractional customer support team, right? And we'll just do it for, you know, whoever needs that small amount of support. And things just kind of aligned in a way where Ellis, who is my business partner on Evergreen Support, also was looking to do something, start a business. You know, we had been working together actually on a different business. It wasn't going well, right? And we're kind of at this pivot point. And I really like working with her, and I just pitched it to her. I was like, I think you'd be really good at this too. You have the skill set, right? Let's do it together. And so that's kind of how that one came about.
Pretty sweet. How did you meet your co-founder?
We were working together. We met. I was a software engineer. She was in kind of business operations for a remote company. We met in 2021, I want to say. I don't know. Okay. All the time kind of combines together. But we knew each other for about a year and had worked together on in that business. We actually took over that business, which was a preschool, an online preschool.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, so we took over the online preschool together, and we're running it, and we're like, this isn't working. This is hard. And it wasn't a good fit for a lot of reasons. And then that's kind of where this pivot came in, because I still wanted to work with her, even as we decided to close that business.
It's hard to think of I guess the preschoolers weren't really your customers, but that's who you're dealing with.
The day, and like parents, money. Right? A lot of dealing with parents. and it, for me, it wasn't a great fit. I think for Ellis, maybe a better fit. She is a parent. She has a 2-year-old and has another child coming soon. I don't have kids. It's hard for me to talk to parents. I mean, I'm like, yeah, that's great. Like, that's awesome. But you don't always speak the same language, right? And so I feel like Learn to Solder Kits, that was an area that I was really invested in and knew a lot of people. I did a lot of DIY projects, did a lot of volunteering for engineering, you know, kind of enrichment. And then Evergreen Support, I have a lot of experience with business owners and run my own business. So I feel like talking to those customer bases is a lot easier for me.
Yeah, the Evergreen Support seems like a great fit as well, because at least over this last year that we've known each other, seems like you're doing a great job of building an audience on Twitter and like among indie hackers. And as their businesses grow, they need your services, these support services. Is that how you've been growing so far, or have you found other channels of growth?
Good question. I have gotten some customers from Twitter, but also referrals. That's been the big one, is we work with a business owner. They're really happy with the service we're doing. They're talking with their other business owners. And I find a lot of them have groups, whether it's Indie Worldwide or they're in some other business mastermind group or some place where they're talking with these other business owners. The challenge of customer support comes up. They say, hey, I've got a solution for you, right? And then they refer us. And those referrals have been, one, I think the best fit, right? Because that person who's referring, they understand what we do, what we're capable of, right? When they're talking to the other business owner. And, you know, we get this really warm lead that comes in because happy customer, telling them how great, you know, their life has been since we've started with them. I mean, they come in and a lot of them are like, where do I sign? Like, let's get started. Let's go. Yeah. Can I give you access right now?
You make me jealous. You make me want to start a productized service. Because I see, like, oh, yeah, that's a good fit, you know? So I'm looking at, like, your pricing points and stuff.
I mean, it's definitely... it's a lot of work, right? I don't want to be like, oh, you know, you just kick back and, you know, on the beach, you know. I think a lot of SaaS founders are kind of looking for that very minimal, like, oh, I'll build this thing and I'll just produce money. Productized service, like, yes, it's a lot of work, but it's also easier in some ways, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very easy to sell it, right? I can just explain, like, you would hire a customer support agent for this much money to do this work. Or you can hire Evergreen Support for this much money, and we'll do this work. And here is what we produce, right? We do these tickets. Most of the founders that we work with have been doing their own customer support for a few years, right? And they're like, great, I get 2 hours of my day back. Like, fantastic. And, you know, they've got marketing and development and whatever else is on their plate. So it's really easy to have that conversation. I think SaaS is harder to sell, and I've actually never really sold a SaaS, so, you know, maybe I don't have as much experience there, but, you know, you really got to be like, this is going to streamline your operations, and you need to pay us $29 a month. Well, I could just say, I'm going to do your customer support tickets, pay us $300 a month, right?
Yeah.
So kind of different conversations there when you're trying to sell.
I think part of the reason so many like indie SaaS businesses fail is because SaaS is very hard to market, especially as just one person. Like, if you're selling things for sometimes less than $10 a month, sometimes maybe up to 30 or 40, scaling that is really difficult. Like, are you going to spend the money on ads? A lot of indie hackers hate ads. Like, they don't want to spend any money on ads. So that's out. Okay, well, that was your easiest way to grow. So what do you have left? It's like, oh, you know, they'll just find it. No, probably won't.
Find it. Or referrals.
So yeah.
You know, which can work, but you're looking at a really long timeline, right? And so I think I see a lot of kind of indie SaaS people, they get stuck. Like, they have a good idea, but it's going to take 3 years, 4 years, you know, who knows how long to really grow to what they need. And maybe they can't put the time in to do the marketing or whatever, so then they close it down or they pivot or, you know. I think with, like, a productized service, it's a lot easier to get that revenue growth. Or at least I've felt it's a lot easier. I'm not a salesperson by trade, right? And so, you know.
It feels like it's more of a natural fit with that, like, indie style of, like, personal outreach. Like, that works if each person that signs up is worth $300. But it doesn't really work if each person's worth 30, because then you have to reach out to 10 times as many. God forbid, it's $3, you know, now you're talking to 100 people.
Oh, sounds tough.
And right, that's 100 sales, 10% conversions, you're talking to thousands of people. You can't scale that kind of personal outreach for such a cheap product.
With, like, Evergreen, when I look at it, I'm like, wow, if we have 25 clients, like, that's pretty great. Like, you know, our lowest tier right now is about $300, but our average customer is spending about $600 to $700 a month on customer support with us. And so 25 is, like, pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's two of us, obviously, so you got to kind of split that. But and then we get some good operations in place, you know, maybe hire someone to help with the tickets. I feel like it's pretty sustainable. We'll see. We can check back in a year and see if it goes the way I think it will.
It seems you're on a good trajectory. So this is indie worldwide, right? Like, a lot of people are trying to figure things out, what their business is. A lot of people are really interested in the 0 to 1. So I'd like to ask you, what did the 0 to 1 look like first for Learn to Solder Kits and then for Evergreen Support? Yeah. Like, if you were to wrap up the origin story of Emma, how did she become the indie hacker that she is today?
So with Learn to Solder Kits, this was back in 2015, and I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I still kind of have no idea what I'm doing, but, you know, even less of an idea. And I got the idea from doing outreach at schools. I was working as a software engineer, and I was participating in these outreach events through my company, Intel, at the time, teaching like high schoolers cool engineering things to try and, you know, get more engineers in the workforce. And I hated the soldering kits that were on the market. I just had all sorts of problems in my workshops. They were too complicated. The parts were too cheap, like all these issues, and the kids would become frustrated. I would become frustrated. And so that's where I got the idea to design my first soldering kit. And so I designed something super simple, and I just posted it on my Facebook, and I was like, hey, you know, I had a lot of engineering friends from college and people. I was like, hey, do you have a kid who wants to solder, or, you know, a cousin or whatever? Here's some soldering kits. And I just sold them through my Facebook for the first units. And then after I sold through my first 60, I was like, wow, those went really fast. I should make more of those, right?
Yeah.
And that's like, that was amazing. That was really cool. Like, people paid me money for this thing that I designed, you know, and I think I was asking like $9 or $10 for a kit or something, you know, very reasonable, and just shipping them out of my house. And so after that, I kind of decided, okay, like, let's get on Amazon. Like, a lot of people were talking about Amazon, drop shipping and other stuff. So I got on Amazon and started selling there. And I really didn't sell a ton of units for the first, I would say, couple of years. I mean, maybe it's kind of like that SaaS growth curve. I didn't do a lot of marketing. I just listed them online, talked to people I knew about soldering, and they would, you know, come and buy the kits. And then it really started to grow maybe in like 2018, you know, so I've been doing it for 3 years just on the side. And then like 2019, I was like, okay, let's get serious about this. Like, I'm somehow selling kits, doing no marketing, right? I'm selling, you know, 500 units a month or something. What would happen
this
if
I actually
marketed
this? Assembling all the kits?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me. And sometimes I rope in a friend or somebody, right? And I actually work with Andy, my boyfriend, as well. And he does the kit stuff, too, and helps me design them. And so, yeah, we were just doing it all ourselves on weekends. We're both working full time, right? And, like, I don't know, it was okay, right? just doing it. Then we got to a point, so then in 2019, I was like, okay, let's get serious. Like, let's do some pay-per-click ads and, like, do some stuff. And then we started getting more orders and more orders. And then I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. I can't, like, pack all of these kits and work full-time.
Great problem to have.
And great problem to have. And then I was like, oh, my God, I've never hired an employee. I have no idea what I'm doing, right? And now we're into, like, this is into 2021. That's when I was like, oh, I have to hire. Like, 2020, we saw a big boom. Like, COVID happened, but a lot of people were online shopping, right? And so suddenly, selling even more kits. And 2021, I was like, we have to hire. Like, we have to shut this business down or hire, because I cannot take this anymore. You know, it's just too much. And so ended up hiring our first employee, and she has been amazing. And now she's been with us for 2 years and huge help. And then that really allowed me to scale the business even more. And I think that also ties into Evergreen, though, is I realized freeing up my time really allowed me to scale a business in a way that I couldn't do with just, you know, two people. And so when I talk to people on Evergreen calls and stuff, that's what I talk about. I'm like, what would you do if you had 1 to 2 hours back and you didn't have to do these customer support emails, right? And they've got a long list of things they would love to do.
Yeah, I bet. So you said your employees are remote. How does that work with a physical, like, e-commerce business?
Great question. Yeah, I kind of hobbled together this, like, I call it remote manufacturing. I mean, it helps that we are very light manufacturing. We don't require any special machines or anything. It's just putting stuff into bags, mostly. So both of my employees are local, so they're in Sacramento, but they work out of their homes. And we do kind of like pickups and drop-offs as needed, usually like once a week, maybe, if we've got to transfer like parts between each other. But it actually works surprisingly well. I mean, they like working from home, right? Like, big bonus. There's not a lot of jobs you can do that are this type of work where you can work from home. And we also work async, right? So I'm just like, usually we kind of talk and we're like, okay, this week we need to get 500 kits done, you know, by the end of the week, let's do it, right? And then, like, that's kind of it, right? Whatever they can get the, find the time, they track their hours and everything for, you know, payroll, and they just fit it into their schedule. And it works really well for me, because I don't want to be sitting and managing people in a warehouse, right? Like, that sounds... I like working from home, too. I like working async, too, right? And so it, like, works for everybody. I don't really know anybody else who doesn't this way, right? I would love to meet some more people who are doing kind of e-commerce, like, remote and async, the way that we do it. But it's worked great.
You might be the only ones. Probably not, though.
I'm sure there's somebody else out there who's kind of figured out. You can see I've got a bunch of storage bins behind me. Like, this is where I keep a lot of my parts and stuff. I have a lot less now. I used to have, like, so much, right? But, like, now we're kind of split between the three locations. And I pay for all their storage bins and anything that they need to kind of set up a little, you know, workspace for them to work out of their home.
How did you find that first employee? And what were some of the things that, like, the checklist of things, if you were to go back in time and hand yourself a checklist, like, this is what you should know. It'll make your life easier. What's
good
on it?
Question. So I think I had a couple advantages too from my day job. I had done a ton of interviewing as a software engineer. I've been working at these VC backed startups, which are usually high growth, right? So you see just tons of candidates coming through as they're trying to scale their engineering team. So I'd been kind of trained on how to do interviews, and I have sat through many interviews, evaluated candidates, hired people. So I think that was just a huge help going into it. I'd done it before. Engineering, slightly different, but, you know, same. Can you work with people? That kind of stuff. I posted the job on Indeed. I don't know. I was just like, Indeed sounds good. I'm looking for someone local. Let's try that. And within 24 hours, I had 80 applicants. And I was like, oh, my God, this is too many applicants. I am, like, really overwhelmed right now, right? And I kind of posted the job. I had a person in mind that I was looking for and did not end up being the type of person I ended up hiring. In my mind, I was like, oh, this would be a great job for, like, a college student, right? Flexible work hours, fitted around, you know, their schedule. I advertised like 5 to 10 hours a week. So it's very part time. And so that was who I thought I would hire when I put the job out. And I did get some applicants like that, but I was surprised in the diverse number of applicants I got. Some people had full-time jobs and were looking for something on the side. Some people were home with their kids and needed something. And I just kind of decided to do phone screens. I picked five people who had, like, strong applications, who'd written, like, little intro paragraphs, maybe not like a full cover letter, but like intro of why I want to work for your business on the Indeed application. I picked five of them and did phone screens. And I really just focused on how well they could work with others. I didn't focus as much on, like, can you put parts in a bag? I guess I kind of assumed that anybody can put parts in a bag.
You know? You have the ability to open a bag. You don't even need all your fingers, really.
You know, like, I mean, not, you know, I don't want to be like, anybody can do it. You know, you have to have attention to detail. Like, there's definitely some things that you need. But I guess when I was looking at it, I was like, I can train somebody to do this job well, assuming they come in with good people skills, they ask the right questions, right? They do have that attention to detail. And who I ended up hiring, she actually doesn't have a background at all in this type of stuff, e-commerce. She actually has a background in crafting. So one of her hobbies is crafts, right?
I was thinking this whole time. It's like, this sounds like the modern equivalent of the lady that, like, knits hats all day, you know?
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Like the crochet machine, you know? So, because it's
somebody
similar kind of work, you know?
Somebody likes to, like, work with their hands, right? Has good attention, can organize parts, right? She has background in that, loves that, right? And that's actually kind of what we talked about in our interview. And I was like, great, let's do it. You know, we'll see. And great fit. And then for the second employee, she was actually referred in by my first employee. I'm big on referrals, as you can tell. I was like, oh, I think we need to hire. Like, we're getting a lot of hours. Like, oh, this is, you know, it was getting a lot for my one employee to handle. And she was like, oh, I know a couple people who might be interested, right? Like, let me ask around and, you know, I'll make an intro and you can interview them. So she did that, found someone who was great, and I interviewed them and hired them.
Were there any, like, logistical challenges, like setting up payroll or, like, now you've got new tax things to worry about? Or
oh, yeah.
Just things you didn't even realize would be a problem until they were.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I realized it would be a problem so long time ago, back when I was starting Learning to Get Out, back in 2015, I had also run a few other businesses. I've tried many things and failed many times, right? And I had really messed up the books in one of my previous business, not intentionally, right? Just ignorance. Mm. I did not understand the tax complexity and everything. And it was a huge mess that had to be cleaned up. So after that, I hired a bookkeeper who I work with very regularly. So I have a bookkeeper who helps me, and then also a CPA. And so that really helped with hiring because they knew what to ask and what to do. I ended up setting up payroll on Gusto, which I really like. Big fan of Gusto because they make it really easy. And so the platform was helpful. And then having the bookkeeper and CPA, I could also talk to and ask questions to, helped me set it up smoothly. But it is hard. I mean, it's challenging. I've got to pay two people to advise me to do it right, you know?
How much do they end up costing you per month?
Not that much. I pay them out $300 a month for bookkeeping services. And then the CPA is like a one-off, payment, right? Like, depending on the hours. Yeah. I try and ask the CPA as few questions as possible because CPAs are very expensive. I think having a bookkeeper is a great asset. I would highly recommend it to people who are kind of at a stage with their business where they're having questions about their books, because they can help you get all the books organized for the CPA, right? So instead of handing the CPA just a pile of trash that they have to sort through, which was, that was my first experience, right? Which takes them hours, of course, because it's disorganized and, you know, all that. Then you end up paying a ton of money. Having that bookkeeper, they organize everything. They speak the same language. Then you hand it off to the CPA and they're like, okay, I can do this in 1 hour, right? Or 2 hours, you know, whatever it is, because they have all the information they need. It's hugely helpful.
I feel like these things are obvious once you've done it. And up until that point, completely opaque, like no idea how to do it. And people don't talk about it because it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
But like most indie hackers have never needed a bookkeeper before, and they might not even have heard of the word until suddenly they realize, uh-oh, my books are dirty.
I mean, that was me, right? Yeah. I mean, I probably filed taxes wrong for like 2 to 3 years. And then the IRS was like, hey, this doesn't look right, you know? And I will say, like, the IRS, I mean, I live in the United States. I know you have a lot of people on the side. I live in the United States, in California. The IRS isn't actually that mean if you make a mistake, which I think is good, right? I was always like, oh, the IRS is going to, like, cart me away.
They're not
right?
mean. They like, are scary. They're default, by default, scary.
They are scary. But they're nice. Usually. As long as you're like trying to work with them, they're pretty nice, right? As long as it really was like, okay, I made an honest mistake. I'm not trying to like embezzle tons of money or anything. I really just have no idea what I'm doing, right? Obviously, I made a mistake. Let me try to make it right, you know? The IRS is pretty chill, right? They were fine with that.
You want to just stay with the phone agents. You never want to have to talk to a door agent, you know? Because it's coming.
I never had to do that, right? They sent me, like, scary letters, and, like, the scary letters were enough for me to be like, oh, crap. Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Let me hire a CPA. Let's fix this. I ended up having to pay a lot of money, right? Like, it did cost money to make it right. But it was fine. But after that experience, it was definitely a wake-up call that I was like, okay, I need to get ahead of this, right? Because I did it wrong for so long. Let me hire the bookkeeper. And that was in 2019 when I made the decision, you know, quote-unquote, to get serious about my business. I hired the bookkeeper. And I've worked with her, the same bookkeeper, since 2019. She was, I guess, my first hire. She's a contractor that I found on Upwork. But we work together a lot, and she's fantastic. Couldn't do it without her.
Did getting serious about your business mean leaving your job, or did it just mean working a lot more hours?
No, working more hours. I didn't leave my job until, what, last year, right? 2022. Yeah. So it definitely meant working more hours, but it also meant being more strategic about how I was working, right? Because I had started Learn to Solder kits. Like I said, I just kind of sold them to anybody who asked. Like, sure, I'd gone to a couple, like, kind of conferences and set up booths, but, you know, I wasn't doing, like, a lot of follow-up. I didn't have a newsletter. I had a website, but it was super outdated. So I started to try and be strategic about how I spent my time, right? Is, like, what I'm doing right now going to build this business up in the long run? And I did start working a lot more. I was working probably every weekend to try and make sure we were meeting demand and reaching out to teachers and all that.
That filter of, will this thing I'm working on make money, is, I think, a really good one to learn if you want to make your business work. And yeah. I think I'm still learning it, you know? There's so many things I want to do that don't pass the filter.
Well, yeah, I've done so many things. I think somebody asked me how many businesses I've started. I should write them all down. I think I've probably started 5 or 6 businesses in my life. And obviously not all of them have made it, but I think I learned something from everyone. I think one of the things I had to learn was when to close a business. That was another lesson. I think early on, I definitely hung on too long to businesses that weren't a good fit for various reasons. Like, sure, maybe they were making some money, right? But it wasn't a ton. And I wasn't super happy, right? I dabbled in some, like, consulting and freelance stuff. Turns out that's not for me, right? Like, there's plenty of people who make a lot of money doing freelancing, which is awesome, right?
So you draw a line between freelancing and productized service.
I do. I personally think they're very different, having done freelancing before. Productized service is, like, it's every month. Like, you don't have to go hunt for new contracts constantly. Mm. Like, when I was freelancing, you know, every contract is, okay, this is a 6-month contract for these deliverables. Then you hand it off and you're done, right? And now I've got to go find another 6-month contract and do it all over again. With a productized service, like, I get to work with my customers for months, right? Like, our earliest customers have been with us for 7 months, which is awesome. Like, it's awesome because, one, it's stable income, but I also feel like I get to really help the business grow, right? Their business grow. I'm kind of a part of their business in a way, a very small part, you know, doing customer support. But we often talk about operations and things like that to make their business run smoother. And I get to see the outcome of that, which for me is very rewarding, right? Different people feel differently about that, but I love seeing that. And with freelancing, it was hard for me when I just handed it off and now I'm done with it, right? Like, maybe I get really attached to my work or something, but, you know.
Yeah. So, since I got you, I want to pick your brain a little bit, too, about this whole Indie World Wide thing.
Hit me.
First of all, you've been a member now, I think, for a bit over a year. Do you remember, I remember, I think we got in touch through Twitter, and I somehow convinced you to join. I'm curious, do you remember, like, why you joined initially, and was it what you expected?
Great questions. So yes, we did get in touch through Twitter, and it's actually funny because you reached out to me when I was leaving on a 6-week trip. I was going to Spain for 6 weeks, and you reached out to me like the first, like, I don't know, I was just about to leave or had just left, and I was like, oh, this seems really nice, but I'm leaving for 6 weeks. Like, this is not a good time for me, you know? And, you know, I told you that, that was fine. Then I came back from that trip, right? And I think, you know, maybe I was back from that trip for like a month or so, and I was still following you on Twitter and seeing you post it. And then you reached out again, and I was like, hey, you know? And I was like, oh yeah, I should really join this. And one of the reasons I really wanted to join was I wanted to get more serious about my indie business building, right? Because I had left my job in March, and I think I joined, I'd have to look it up, but I feel like I joined in maybe June, right? Or July. And it was another situation where I was like, I want to get more serious about this. I want to meet more people who are building businesses because I didn't know very many. And so I signed up and joined. I think it met my expectations pretty well. I really like the intro calls that you do, where you do the one-on-one intros. which I haven't actually done a lot of this year because I've been so busy. But when I joined at first, I did a lot of the intro calls, and I had a lot of fun meeting those people, doing those one-on-one meetups. And now I just like being in the Slack group and seeing what people are talking about. And, you know, I can ask kind of questions like, what do you call your 1 year anniversary? You know, or the name for it. And so, yeah, I think it met my expectations. I'm probably coming up on a year of membership soonish. I was actually just looking at your lifetime membership, and I was like, maybe I should just do the lifetime membership.
Maybe.
You know.
Just launched like yesterday.
I know. I was looking at your new website that you announced on the Slack, right? So I like being in the group a lot. I think it's hard to meet other people who are doing this and get it, right? Like, I have a lot of friends who are very supportive. They're awesome, right? They think it's cool and they think it's great. But, you know, they don't really want to talk about what it means to hire a bookkeeper and why that is valuable, you know. And we can't really have a big discussion about that because, you know, it's not of interest to them. Totally fair. You know, you're hanging out with people who are kind of W-2 workers. That's not what they usually talk about. And so Indie Worldwide has become that group for me. And then I've met some people through there or through Twitter who now I meet with just regularly one-on-one just to chat and check in, which is nice to kind of have your own little indie mentorship ring, I guess, or whatever you would call it.
Is there anyone in particular you remember that you met through Indie Worldwide and has become one of these ongoing friendships?
Mark, awesome. He goes by Judo Hacker, right, on Twitter. Yeah. He's like the coolest guy ever. I feel like I always talk about him in my interviews, but he is a great member of Indie Worldwide. He's a great member of the Twitter community, right? Been a really big supporter. And yeah, that's probably one of the best connections I've made. And I made that one through Indie Worldwide. It was a, you know, random matchup that we did.
I definitely got lucky with, so I first met Mark at an in-person meetup in Montreal. I think slightly before I started Indie Worldwide, or right around the same time.
Yeah.
So he ended up being one of the very first members. And I think I got lucky there. You know, they say like your first employee matters a lot at a startup. I feel like when you're building a community, your first members really matter a lot to help you set the tone and create a good culture.
How many members do you have now? Well, I haven't checked your progress bar recently. Where are you at?
So the newsletter was a bit over 5,000 readers. I just dropped a bunch of our cold subs, so now we're around 4,000 something. And last year, our Slack had ballooned to like a similar number. It was like 2,000 or 3,000, but a lot of people were inactive. So I ended up cutting out 90% of people from the Slack if they hadn't been active in a while. Anybody who wanted to stay was welcome to stay, but I wanted to clear out anyone who was either not actively building a startup or not in the community anymore. So now in the Slack, if I check, we are at 600 members in the Slack, and I'm usually shooting for the number I look at most is like weekly active, and I'm usually trying to keep it around 100 weekly active people. Around, if it gets to 150, it gets a little too noisy, and if it gets down to 50, it's too quiet, so.
You do a good job of avoiding having spammers in your group too, right? Like some groups end up with a lot of people who just like DM spam all the time. You know, I mean, sure, I guess they're providing services for startups and, you know, that's fair, but, you know, it doesn't feel great when it's cold, right? Like, sure, if we're chatting about something and you chime in like, oh, I provide that service, great, you know, that totally fits. But if they just reach out totally cold, I personally don't like that very much. And I think your group does a good job of keeping that to a minimum.
The things that helped the most were, honestly, adding the paywall. That cut out 90% of it. Then there was some holdover from before the purge, and now it's pretty much
before the purge.
BP, yeah, before purge.
What's your next goal? What's your next goal for Indie Worldwide? Are you gonna take it?
My goal is, I guess, just like 100 active people who really care about the community and want to stick around. And build something together. That'd be my main goal. I feel like if we were trying to blow it up and grow it again to like a multi-thousand member community, it might be hard to keep the same vibe. So I'll think about ways that can be done. But my main goal is just to get a strong core of people who are happy to be there and are building cool stuff. And obviously people yeah. will do different things in their life, and some will come and some will go, but to keep it around that number, I think would be ideal.
Yeah, that's good. And then, you know, grow out your other things that you've got. You've got Bot, Eat, Brain, right?
Just got stickers.
You got stickers.
Yeah, with another Indie Worldwide member, Anna. Anna and I teamed up on Wisen Guides, which is still up, and it's still a really good resource that I point people to. But
I used it for cold emails, and it was super helpful. So, yay.
Yeah, we got to figure out what we want to do with it, because we both ended up, like, jumping onto other projects, and then, like, a couple months passed, and we're like, oh, wait, what? Where'd that time go? Weren't we building a thing?
That happens. Yeah, probably happens.
But we wrote a bunch of really good content, and then completely failed to monetize it, and just like did a lot of work for free.
I don't know. I don't think everything has to be monetized sometimes, right? Like, I know we talk about that all the time, but you know, I think it's okay too to just kind of do things, see what you like, learn something from it, or you know, helps your reputation. People know that you worked on the guide, so yeah.
Yeah. All right. Parting advice for the wannabe indie hacker. What do people need to get straight before they jump in this pool?
I would say just go for it, right? I think a lot of people spend so much time kind of overthinking stuff and over planning. I would just launch as soon as you could launch. Like Evergreen support, I spent like 5 days on the website and just launched it. And I'd never done customer support. And I was just like, I'm just going to try and see if people will go for this. I think it's a good idea. And I mean, I was very upfront with our first customers. I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, but do you want to try it with me? Right. And of course gave them a great deal because, you know, it was early on, but I think that was much better than delaying and delaying launch to try and get it perfect and try and charge super high prices. So I would say just go for it.
Just go for it. All right, Emma, thank you so much. Not only for this, but for being a member of Indie Worldwide. You make the community a much better place for your being.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for organizing the community. I really appreciate it.
I started it to meet people like you, so mission accomplished.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Great chatting. Bye.